Welcome, my dear friends. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday morning to you. Freedom Above Fortune .net, and click on the join donate button in the upper left hand corner of the homepage. Given the many blessings God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in heaven. So I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. You and I both know that our country is in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey His commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I invite you to join my email list by visiting my website at freedomabovefortune.com. You can click on mailing list on the left-hand side of the homepage. You can also go to agentfortruth.com for more information about me and my work, and there's also a way to join the email list there at agentfortruth.com. Briefly, for the benefit of new listeners, I'm a former IRS special agent. I worked in the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws do not actually require most Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a great deal of documents and evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. And when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from my position at the IRS. So my IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999, when I did in fact resign from the Internal Revenue Service, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other constitutional liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism. The film takes a provocative look at the Federal Reserve and federal income tax systems, and I highly recommend that you watch the film as soon as possible. If you've already watched the film, be sure to recommend it to others. You can type in the words America, Freedom to Fascism into any search engine and watch the movie for free, or you can order copies at freedomtofascism.com, and fascism is F-A-S-C-I-S-M, freedomtofascism.com. My guest for today's show is Richard Mack. He is a former sheriff in Arizona and did some just remarkable things in the past and in the last century, so it seems so long ago. But I came across Richard and his story while I was still serving as an IRS special agent, and just admire him so much, and I'm just so gratified that once I left the IRS, I was able to meet Richard and actually become friends. So it's just an absolute honor. Richard's agreed to be on for the entire show today, so I'm just thrilled to have him. Richard, welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot. It almost seems like a century ago.
It does. When you're battling, for what's good and just, it does seem to take every scrap of energy that you might have. Maybe you could start, just for benefit of listeners who may not know your story, just give a thumbnail sketch of right from the beginning, your early days as a police officer, and then how that blossomed into becoming sheriff of a county, and then how that ended up where you took on literally the United States government, the Clinton administration, and came out victorious, not only for yourself, but really for all of America.
Well, it really was a miracle, and as I look back at it, it becomes more and more miraculous all the time. And sometimes when I'm reminiscing, I'll look at my wife and say, how did we ever do that? Because it really was such a miracle. And for a small town county sheriff to take on the Clinton administration is, well, it's a no daunting task. And it was something I was really afraid of. You know, some people say, well, you're really courageous. And I said, no, I really wasn't courageous. I was probably just a little bit naive and too ticked off not to do anything else. So, but, you know, my story started as a meter maid for a Provo Police Department in Utah. That's where BYU is. And I was going to school at BYU. And I was working my way through college. And I was a part-time meter maid while I was doing that. And then I hired on full-time with Provo Police Department. And during that time, 1979, I actually applied for the FBI. And I think you'll remember my father was a retired FBI agent, and I wanted to follow his footsteps. And the FBI applications just never worked out. And so I stayed on with Provo Police, and all I wanted to be was a cop. And I did dream about being a sheriff someday, but I thought that would be way down the road in my career, much, much later. But something happened on the way to the forum, if you will. I actually got very disenchanted with law enforcement. And I was writing a lady a ticket one day, and I stopped and told myself, I'm not giving this lady this ticket. It's wrong. It's immoral. And I walked away from her with this ticket in my hand, and I realized that, yes, she was the one who ran the stop sign, but I was the one in the wrong. And I always look back at that incident as the good Lord hitting me over the head with a 2x4, waking me up to what really is important. And so after I left that lady who changed my life, I decided that there had to be something more in law enforcement than just writing tickets and bringing in numbers and fighting the drug war. And I had just finished a one-year assignment as an undercover narcotics officer. I hated that with a passion, and I still can't believe that our government, that police agencies, and that the people in general want good, honest American cops to risk their lives for marijuana. And that was the bulk of the drug war at the time, and it still is in a lot of ways. And so I decided that because of my undercover experience and because of the ticket that I almost wrote that lady, that I had to start all over, that I had to find a reason why I was really a cop and why we had government in general and what it was all for. And so I decided that I was going to find out the purpose for which I was a cop. And I didn't even know what I was looking for. All I knew is that I had to find the answer. And during my search, Joe, I got to tell you that I ran smack in the face of the oath of office. I completely started over, and while I was searching, I went into the city clerk's office, and I asked her, when I started as a cop, what was I required to do? What did I do to become an employee here? And she said, well, the first thing you had to do was to sign your oath of office. And I didn't even remember doing it. And I said, I signed an oath of office, and she could tell that I was a little bit bewildered. So before I could ask, she actually handed me a copy. She burned me a copy. It was right there in my 201 file. And she handed it to me, and literally I had signed it and dated it. It was March something of 1979. And at that point, I decided that I could no longer work in law enforcement, that I needed to quit my job and go find something else that did not prompt me or force me to be a liar and a hypocrite and to take an oath that I had no intention of ever keeping, that I never even considered keeping my oath or upholding and defending the Constitution, as my oath said. I'd never read the Constitution before in my entire life. I'd never read the Utah Constitution, and I swore that I would uphold and defend both of those documents. And Joe, I'm going to tell you and your listeners, and every cop in this country, it is impossible to keep an oath to something that you've never read. And so I felt so discouraged and ashamed that I was going to go quit my job. And then, wondering what in the world my wife would tell me if I came home early from work and said, well, I'm not a cop anymore, and as a matter of fact, I'm now out of work. And I just imagine her telling me, so you quit your job because you're a liar and a hypocrite, and you didn't keep your oath, so you can't stay there in a job that makes you a liar and a hypocrite. Yep, that's it. That's it. And I'm sorry. I'll get another job right away. And then I this felt very real, but I didn't have this conversation with her. I was just kind of having it with my wife, realizing what she would have told me. And I was having this conversation with myself, wondering how she was going to react. And then in my imagination and in this vivid, imaginable scenario with my wife, she says, well, could you consider one other thing before maybe quitting your job? Could you consider quit being a liar and a hypocrite and keep your job? And I was so amazed at her insight. And I said, well, that's kind of typical. My wife's always smarter than me anyway. And so at that point, I put my Sam Brown back on and put my badge back on, went down to briefing and decided that I would stay a cop, but that I was going to learn and understand and become very proficient in knowing and understanding the United States Constitution. And yes, I will tell you, I read the Utah Constitution also because I swore an oath to that too. But first and foremost, in every oath of office in this country, I don't care if you're the President of the United States or the local dog catcher or anything in between, we all swear an oath of allegiance to the United States Constitution. And I decided I was going to do that, and so I kept the World Book Encyclopedia that had the U.S. Constitution in it. I kept that in my patrol car for the next week. And any time that I wasn't on a call, I was reading the Constitution. And then I started reading the Declaration of Independence. And then I started reading about the Founding Fathers. And then another part of this epiphany occurred. The state of Utah, Utah Post put out a training seminar entitled Constitutional Studies for Law Enforcement Officers. And that
got why don't we just stop right there, because we've got a break coming up, and then you can get into that class, because that's another, well, they're all interesting parts of your story and your evolution there. So our guest is Richard Mack, and currently, well, we're going to be talking about the CSPOA, so you can go to CSPOA.org if you want to check out things before we describe them. So we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
To freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
She knows a hollow from a double up. She does snapbacks, backsides, shoots the curl. Bethany Hamilton knows everything about surfing. She just didn't know about the shark. But just months after the attack, and with only one arm, the 13-year-old surfs again. And now she's ripping it better than ever. So next time life puts a little fear in you, just think of Bethany Hamilton hanging 10 on top of a heavy wave. That's real courage. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Richard Mack. He's a former sheriff, and I always think about him as still my sheriff. I still live in his county, but it's just that wishful thinking that I lived in a county that had a sheriff like him. But before the break, we had to interrupt for the break. Richard was describing his progression through being a police officer and then recognizing the foundation for that position, which of course is your oath to support and defend the Constitution of the state in which you serve and the federal Constitution as well. And so Richard was just talking about a class that was being put on by the Utah Post authorities, and POST stands for Police Officer Standards and Training. Richard can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a nationwide, it's a uniform set of standards that all states have signed on to. And so the POST training program was putting on a class. So go ahead and start from there, Richard.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And most states have that kind of a bureaucracy that oversees qualifications for cops. And this one in Arizona and Utah, they're called AZ Post or Utah UT Post, and it's the bureaucracy that oversees academy requirements and certification requirements. And so they actually were offering, very surprisingly, a seminar for police officer training. Ongoing training. Every cop has to do so many hours of ongoing training every year to maintain a certification as a peace officer. And so this one, very surprisingly, I mean, it just floored me. While I'm going through my evolution of learning to become a constitutional officer and learning the Constitution, the notice from POST to the police department I work for announced a training seminar called Constitutional Studies for Law Enforcement Officers. And the instructor's name was Dr. W. Cleon Skousen. Now, I had heard of Skousen several times, but I'd never met him, and I'd never read any of his books. But my father had worked with him in the FBI, and my father was very fond of him. And my wife's parents knew him very well and had a lot of his books in their home. And so I said, well, man, if there's anybody that needs this class, it's me. So I went to the class, and it was at the University of Utah in Salt Lake City. And there was about 240 cops there. It was jam-packed. And during this entire class, it was 16 hours, 2 days, of training about the Constitution. The book and the material was really based on a book that he had written called The Making of America. And I was just enthralled with every bit of it. I loved it. It was touching my heart and soul. And I was converted. And I do mean converted. During this two-day deal, I took another oath, and I said, I will never be on the wrong side again. And I promised myself that I would follow the Constitution, that I would stand for these principles that we had studied these, that I had been studying the last few months, and that we'd studied those 2 days. And at one point, Dr. Skousen, because he and I had talked a lot during breaks and stuff, and he knew who my wife's parents were. He knew, obviously, who my father was. And so we struck up quite a friendship and were talking quite a bit. Well, towards the end of the seminar, he handed every one of us the book, The Making of America. And I was just thrilled with it. It was a great book, probably the longest book I've ever read. It was almost 700 pages long. And I loved every bit of it. I loved every page. And I loved the power of this man when he spoke. And my knowledge was complete, well, my knowledge wasn't, but my conversion was complete. I was still very much a freshman student of the Constitution and committed that I would study it more. But when he handed me the book, he said, "Promise me that you'll teach these things to your children." Well, I kept that promise, and now I teach them all over the country. And as you mentioned, I hope to be able to teach these principles to every sheriff in the country. And on January 30th, 2012, we're going to have a wonderful opportunity to teach these things to about 150 to 200 sheriffs from all across the country. And we are going to have a Constitutional Sheriff Convention. The CSPOA stands for Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officer Association. We're going to have cops and sheriffs and county attorneys and county commissioners. And if you want to look at our board of directors, you'll see that there's a chief of police from Florida, a county commissioner from Idaho, and about 14 or 15 current sitting sheriffs from all over the country who have expressed a desire to learn how to become a constitutional sheriff, an oath keeper, if you will, and someone who will actually be the guard of the Constitution in your county. And I'll tell you what, Joe, I believe with all my heart that this is the most important meeting since the Founding Fathers framed the Bill of Rights. This is going to be the promise of taking back our country, county by county, sheriff by sheriff, and state by state, that there will be one person in your county who will have the courage and the know-how and the wherewithal to interpose himself on behalf of the citizens when they are being victimized by our own governments. And as you very well know, there's probably none so great at that victimizing process than the IRS. But it goes much further than the IRS. The EPA does it. The FDA does it. OSHA does it. BATF, of course, we've seen the criminality of the BATF in recent months about the Fast and Furious program. And we've even seen 10 sheriffs from Arizona ask for the Attorney General of the United States to resign because of it. So anyway, I want everybody to look at CSPOA.org, and you can go to the left side and to the menu and see for yourselves the board of directors that we have, a very impressive board of current politicians and leaders and statesmen, I should say, not politicians, but statesmen and sheriffs who are willing to stand for what's right and stand for the Constitution and keep their oath. So anyway, after this two-day seminar with Dr. Skousen, my life just really changed drastically. And actually, after that, I kind of got the reputation as being that constitutional cop at the Provo Police Department. But at the same time, I was respected enough to where I still got promoted. And I started getting promoted and quite a bit. I made corporal just a few months later. I made front desk sergeant about a year after that. And I made sergeant detective after that. And I finished there, and I was also a patrol sergeant for a short time. And then I finished my career at Provo Police as a juvenile crime specialist, and I specialized in child abuse and juvenile delinquency. And I'll tell you what, I have a lot of scars from investigating those horrific crimes. And I don't think there's anything worse than child abuse as a crime. And I will tell you, though, maybe there is one other crime greater, and that is for public officials, sheriffs, chiefs of police, deputies, patrol officers, anybody in government or anybody in law enforcement, to swear an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution and to completely turn your back on it and to never pay any attention to the Constitution. I feel that's probably the worst crime going on in America today. We can change that, and that's my goal, is to change that. It happened to me, and I know it can happen to other people, and I believe that if you put the right information in front of the right people, they'll do the right thing. And that's what our CSPOA is all about, so that sheriffs, chiefs of police, and cops will better serve and protect the citizens of this great country. How do we stop gun control in America? One sheriff at a time, one cop at a time. People who put freedom and the Bill of Rights before their jobs and before their careers and before anything else.
So ultimately, as you well know, when tyranny comes to a person's door, it's going to come with a gun and a badge. And so this effort is just so phenomenal, because we've seen, although it's gratifying to see how many people, especially over the last 10 or 20 years, have woken up to what our federal and state and local governments have been up to, it's a lot easier to educate one sheriff than to educate an entire county. And not to mention that the sheriff, once you show that sheriff, or shall I say just remind him or her about their oath, about what their actual duty is, you know, as long as they're a person of integrity, they're going to recognize, hey, I do have that duty, and I need to do that duty, whereas you know, your average citizen in a county, and they think, well, it's none of my business, I'm not up for that. So you're really targeting the exact person that
yeah.
needs to be targeted with this information.
Yeah, exactly. And I think your point is well taken about teaching the sheriffs, because they are the ones that can make the federal government irrelevant in our lives. It is really up to the sheriff to determine what is and what is not enforced in his county. And I really compare that to the Rosa Parks story. And I think that's something that we really need to consider, especially her as such a significant historical event. And saying that, should we have arrested Rosa Parks back then? No, we should not. Should we arrest the Rosa Parks today, the Amish farmer who deals in raw milk, the gun owner, the tax protester, the homeschooler, the people who simply just want government to leave them alone and stay out of their lives? No, we should be defending those people and making sure that they go get off the bus safely. And we're not going to put those types of people at the back of the bus, even though our government continuously tries to do just that. And it's the sheriff's job to make sure that citizens in his county are not arrested for failure to get to the back of the bus.
And I'm sure, I know what, when you say making the federal government irrelevant, what you mean, but we might, point out to the listeners that the way our federal and state governments were actually set up, and are, of course, it's not a were in the past. I mean, once they're set up and they're supposed to, abide by the constitutional limitations,
right.
And they've gone beyond that. And so when you say making the federal government irrelevant, the fact of the matter is they have their jurisdiction, they have their powers that the Constitution enumerates, and in so many cases, they would be irrelevant simply from the standpoint of they do the business they need to do, and that business was never expected to touch the average American's life. It would have nothing to do with our average lives.
Well, that's exactly correct, and we want everybody to be able to maintain their lives in a nice and peaceful manner. And we hope that the sheriffs will understand their duty to protect us from all enemies, both foreign and domestic. Keep your oath, know and understand the Constitution, and know and understand your people, and that the most important thing in government that we can do is to protect their liberty.
I couldn't agree more. Well, we have another break coming up, and maybe after the break we could go back to the future, so to speak, and talk about your horrendous battle in more detail against the Clinton administration and the Brady Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's where all this led. Yes, absolutely. Let's do that.
Right. That will help to illustrate for the listeners exactly, how you got to be where you are today and how important, this latest effort, the CSPOA, is. So our guest is Richard Mack, and also the Richard Mack, .com or sheriffmack.com?
Yes, sheriffmack.com, not Richard Mack, sheriffmack.com, and then cspoa.org.
Okay, just wanted to repeat that before the break for the listeners.
Yep.
We'll be right back after these messages. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, this is Dan.
And this is Randy.
Do our elected officials take their oath of office serious? Why is the question of constitutionality so important?
Is the Constitution even relevant anymore?
Beginning October the 24th, join us every weeknight from 6 until 7 Central Time for Constitutionally Correct, where you can find the answer to that and many other questions.
Go to constitutionallycorrect.org and click the on-air button.
This is Randall Yearout on Subversion. Just based on current facts before us, our nation's political leaders in elected office and both major parties have embraced policies and legislation subversive to our American form of law and government. Therefore, I think it profitable to visit the wisdom of our founding fathers regarding this kind of behavior. Samuel Adams, regarding spreading the wealth around and centralized control of the economy, said these ideas are, quote, as visionary and impractical as those which vest all property in the crown. They are arbitrary, despotic, and in our form of government, unconstitutional. Unquote. These charges could be aimed directly at our president and Congress today. Thomas Jefferson wrote of a central government so strong that it borders on monarchy, "These men have no right to office. If a monarchist be in office anywhere, and it be known to the president, the oath he has taken to support the Constitution imperiously requires the instantaneous dismission of such officer, and I hold the president criminal if he permitted such to remain. To appoint a monarchist to conduct the affairs of a republic is like appointing an atheist to the priesthood." Unquote. The situation in America today is socialism for we the people and a political class who think they're monarchs rather than our agents. Congressmen openly insulting citizens exercising their First Amendment rights to redress. Congressmen taxing future generations without their consent. Presidents and judges approving of all this with their silence. These will be our defining years in the eyes of our children and grandchildren, but if we do nothing, we will come to nothing. We need Americans in great numbers to join us.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Anticipation for the upcoming has some breaking news. The White House is scrambling to do damage control after the president was caught lip-syncing a speech at the...
Providing quality, affordable health insurance in this country. Our health care system is sucking up all the money.
It was too bad because it happened right before he got to the part about how the power for change rests with every American. That's always my favorite part.
Like, he's just gotten too big, and this just shows that. You know? I mean, he hasn't really done anything good anyway.
The White House seemed to bungle their official response and released a statement claiming the incident was caused by a feedback problem that made it appear that the president's voice was out of time with the movement of his lips. German Chancellor Angela Merkel called Obama's performance disappointing. Network investigation uncovered an exclusive video which appears to show President Obama speaking without pre-recorded audio.
Now, some graduating classes have marched into this stadium in easy time. Times of peace and stability. When we call on our graduates, simply to screw it up.
Husbands, have you ever worried about the risks to your wife's health from the birth control method she's using? Why not learn a natural method that's 99% effective and has no risks to her? You can learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom of Both Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. I'm so happy to have as my guest my friend Richard Mack, having him for the entire show, which is fantastic because we have the time to just explore these various issues that are so important to each and every American. And before the break, we were... You're still addressing Richard's evolution, his progression, recognizing the foundations of what he was to do, what his position was as a police officer, as a peace officer for the state of Utah, and thought what might be good is to kind of go back to the future and have Richard describe a little more in detail his battle against the Clinton administration, because it so well illustrates, especially culminating with the court opinions, the Supreme Court opinions, exactly how our federal and state governments are set up and how they're supposed to operate, you know, vis-a-vis one another. And so nothing can illustrate that better than Richard's story about taking on the Brady Bill and the Clinton administration. So the floor is yours, Richard.
Well, thanks. You know, this really was amazing, and as I look back, I can see how the traffic ticket that I didn't give that lady to starting to study the Constitution and becoming converted to the Constitution and then being promoted, and then all of a sudden, after 11 and a half years with Provo Police Department, I decided that I would move home and run for Graham County Sheriff. That was actually another miraculous evolution, how that happened. But anyway, to make a long story short, my wife and I are both from southern Arizona. We decided to move home and run for Graham County Sheriff. Well, I'd never been a cop in Arizona. I'd never been in law enforcement in my hometown. And I hadn't even lived there for about 12 years. And I'm walking into town saying, hey, make me your head law enforcement officer. And they did, and that was 1988. And then in 1992, I was reelected. And then my constitutional evolution came into play big time. The Brady Bill was signed into law by President Clinton in November of 1993. And I saw President Clinton sign this stupid bill with James Brady there, for whom the bill was named. He was shot during the assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan, and now his wife Sarah is completely exploiting him to pass the Brady Bill. Why she didn't call it the Reagan Bill, I don't know, but anyway, probably because she knew Reagan wouldn't like it, but her husband didn't really like it either, and he told me so at the U.S. Supreme Court when we got there, but that's getting ahead of my story a little bit. But when Clinton signed the Brady Bill into law, he made a statement that I'll never forget, and I wasn't going to sue him over it. It was just one of the most entertaining moments that I'd ever had with a Washington, D.C. politician, especially a president. And he was spewing out his Clinton-esque propaganda like nobody else can. And he said, he told the entire nation that when he was signing this, that the Brady Bill will make our country streets so safe that even our nation's police officers will not need to carry guns anymore.
Oh, wow.
That's a good one, I know. Yeah, but he said it, and, you know, I was just thinking, you know, Clinton is just, you know, he has no shame whatsoever. And so, and like I said, I wasn't going to sue him over that. But on January 21st of 1994, we found out the truth about the Brady Bill. And Clinton and no one else in Washington had ever made any statements as to what the Brady Bill was really going to be about. And that entailed the county sheriffs being required by law to conduct criminal and mental history background checks on behalf of the federal government, with no input from us, no negotiation from us, no contract, nothing. We're just being told, ordered, as a matter of fact, by the federal government. Three agents of the BATF come to our Sheriff's Association meeting and tell us, they handed us a document and told us that this document detailed our marching orders as to how we had to comply with the Brady Bill. And, man, there's only 15 counties in Arizona, and there's 12 sheriffs in attendance at this meeting. And we're all looking at each other like, what in the world is going on here? We don't work for the BATF. We don't work for anybody in the federal government. The President of the United States can't tell us what to do. He doesn't pay our salary. He doesn't work. What do we do? Call our congressman every Monday and say, what do you want us to do this week? You know, they don't tell us what to do. We are not employees of Congress, the President, federal government, or certainly not the BATF. And so they leave and we start cussing up a storm, you know, and there's a lot more sheriffs more upset about this than I was. And, you know, I was the youngest sheriff in the state at the time, and I'm not trying to push my weight around, and I'm listening to these other older guys. They're much more seasoned sheriffs and peace officers. And they just said, this is outrageous, this is federal arrogance, and they can't tell us what to do. And then towards the end of the day, a lot of this is waning. A lot of the mood has changed, and there's still a mood of frustration, but there's now a mood of acceptance. And each sheriff was asked, what do you want to do? What's the final word from you? And each sheriff said, and at least half of them said, well, you can't fight City Hall. We're just going to have to do the best we can to do this. And I was the last one to speak, and I said, you guys, you already convinced me totally. There's no way we should be doing this. There's no way I can go along with this. They're forcing us literally to participate in a federal gun control scheme. Every one of us in this room does not believe in doing something like that. And so I said, I'm not going along. I'm not going to do it. And I had no idea, Joe, had no idea in the world what I was going to do. But I left the meeting. No sheriffs were supporting me. No, they just kind of stared at me. And I was really disappointed. And I had a three-hour drive from Phoenix back to my home. And I was just brooding the whole time. What am I going to do about this stupid bill? I'm not going to go along. And about halfway home, I decided there's no way I'm going to change my mind about two things. One, I am not going to go along with this bill. And two, I am not going to quit my job over this. I'm not going to hide from this. If they want to come and arrest me or get after me for not doing this, whatever they want to do, fine me or whatever, I don't care, but I'm not quitting, and I'm not going to do what they tell me. So I'm getting really defiant in my brooding and in my anger. And then I was brooding the rest of the way home, about another hour and 15 minutes. Well, okay, well, then what am I going to do? Just wait for them to come and get me, or, you know, wait for all the nasty letters from the editor to the editor from local citizens, or, you know, national groups going after. I didn't know. I was just kind of imagining what all could go wrong with this. And I kept asking myself, well, what can I do? What can I do? You know, and I had no answer. And then by the time I drove up in my driveway, it's late at night, I'd say about 9 o'clock, and it hit me. I'm going to sue my own government. I'm going to sue the Clinton administration. And it scared me. I was thought, man, how many people have tried to go after the Clintons, and look what happened to them. And there's no way this is going to be good for us. Not me, not my wife, not my kids, not us as a family. It's going to cost us everything we ever owned. It's going to probably cost my job. And so I go in the house, and now I'm really afraid. I got to tell my wife what this Don Quixote crusade that I wanted to start against the Clintons. And I just, as soon as she walked up to me, I just blurted it out, told her, I'm going to sue the feds. I'm going to sue the Clinton administration. I'm going to sue the federal government. I'm going to take them to court. They're trying to force me to participate in gun control. And she's just kind of staring at me and finally says, what in the world are you talking about? And I tried to explain it to her in just a couple of minutes. And I said, it's going to cost us everything. We're going to end up moving. We're going to lose our job and career. And she goes, well, maybe this is why you were supposed to be sheriff. And I, you know, we still look back at that, and I'm still in awe that she never said anything negative. I'm not kidding you. I want every one of your listeners to know that the good wife I had and that I have now, we've been married almost 37 years, I cannot believe it today. She never said one negative thing about doing this. Hey, Mac, you have five kids. What are you thinking? You know, anyway, she never did. And then she said right after that, she goes, and besides, we weren't really looking for a job when we landed this one.
She's a big picture thinker, isn't she?
Yeah, she really is. And then my mother said the same thing a couple of days later. She goes, now we know why the miracle happened for you to be sheriff. This is what you were meant to do. And so the two most important ladies in my life said the same thing within just a couple of days. And so, Joe, I know you know what I did, but can all your constitutional scholars listening to this tell me what I do now? I went to the office the next day, and I'm wondering, how in the world do I start a lawsuit against the federal government? And I had no clue. I had no idea what I was going to do at all. And so I was not a member of any national organization. I wasn't a member of JBS, NRA, or any tax protest group or anything else. I wasn't a member of anything. But my undersheriff walked in the room, and I said, hey, Mike, you're a lifetime member of the NRA, right? He goes, yeah. And I said, do they have a toll-free number where you can call and get advice? And sure enough, he handed me a card. I called him, and I finally landed in the office of Richard Gardner, and he's a lawyer for the NRA. I told him who I was and what I wanted to do, and his next line absolutely floored me. And I've actually put it in my new book. I've got a new book out called The Magic of Gun Control, and you can get that at my website, sheriffmack.com. But what Richard Gardner said to me next changed my life forever. He said, Sheriff, we've already been preparing the paperwork on this case, and we've been praying that you would call. Well, it turned out that I was the first sheriff in the United States to call him. I was the first sheriff in the United States history to file a lawsuit against my own federal government. And sure enough, later on, a few weeks later, Sheriff Prince from Montana joined the lawsuit. Five other sheriffs from across the country joined. So ultimately, seven small-town sheriffs took on the federal government to stop the Brady Bill. Seven out of 3,100. And to this day, I still look back at it and say, why didn't every sheriff join this lawsuit? But I'm still amazed, too, that the magnificent seven sheriffs took on Janet Reno and the Clinton administration, and ultimately we went all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Took 3.5 years, and Sheriff Prince and I appeared before the U.S. Supreme Court in December of 1996, and then on June 27, 1997, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 split decision that the Brady Bill was indeed unconstitutional, that the sheriffs were correct, that the federal government has no authority to tell local officials to do anything, and in fact, have no authority whatsoever to direct the states in anything.
We have a break coming up, so it's a good place to just to stop, and then we can continue on. What an amazing! Then you can get into what they actually said as to support their decision after the break. Our guest is Richard Mack. SheriffMack.com is his website. CSPOA. For the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association, CSPOA.org. And we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
Thank you. born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
There's a reason education's because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the bull. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American dream was nurtured in the beginning by Thomas Jefferson, one of the greatest defenders of liberty in our history. It was Jefferson's words in the Declaration of Independence that proclaimed God's plan for government to be ordained. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. He clearly understood that history has proven government to be the tool of the greedy and the power hungry, that mankind, seeking safety, is forever falling into the trap of total reliance on government. He warned, "It is error alone that needs the support of government. Truth can stand by itself."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcast. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
Determination. Pass it on. Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I've been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Determination. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com.
put me in office and to the God who put me on earth. And yes, I believe there are some gray areas when it comes to some laws, but I think they're very few and far between. It's not too hard to know that if government makes a law saying that you can't own a gun, or that if you have a gun in your car and it's loaded, that you're going to jail. And we have done that in this country, and we've done it a lot. And let's be very clear on that issue. There is no gray area on that. Gun control in America is against the law. And that was my motivation for filing this lawsuit, because this was, again, forced gun control, a gun control program that had clearly infringed on the right of the people to keep and bear arms. I wasn't going to go along with it, but we had no standing to sue on the Second Amendment, so the NRA had prepared an airtight case on the Tenth Amendment that states' rights and state sovereignty preempts the federal government, and they cannot force a local official to participate with their stupid federal gun control scheme. And so the Tenth Amendment protected the Second in this regard, and now if you ask me, the Second protects all the others. And so this was a huge, miraculous case, and I actually have in my hand a little booklet that is a condensed version, a highlighted version of the Supreme Court decision. And at the very beginning, it states on, let me see which page it's on. It's on page 4. And it states, and I have it memorized because I didn't need to go to the page. This is the United States Supreme Court quoting one of its points in the New York versus U.S. case, which was a year or two before mine, actually a couple years, but still was on the same issue of state sovereignty and the Tenth Amendment. And Justice Scalia quotes that case, and he says, "We have held, however, that state legislatures are not subject to federal direction." Well, that means your state is not subject to federal direction. It doesn't just apply to the legislature. It applies to everybody. It applies to the state. The state legislature represents the state. So would we ask ourselves at that point, well, if they can't tell the state legislature what to do, then that means they can tell the city legislature what to do, or the county legislature what to do, or the school boards what to do, because those are also a governmental entity. Well, Scalia actually clarifies that in two different places in the decision, and he talks about the local or municipal authorities likewise not being subject to the federal government. And in his order at the end of the decision, where the court actually issues their order on the decision, on the ruling, he states that the federal government cannot compel the state or any of their officers, or any of the officers of the political subdivisions of the state. So that would include cities, counties, school boards, or anyone else. So if, and I love this question, if the federal government cannot tell us what to do, any local or city or statewide agency or governmental officers can't tell the public officials what to do, so that means the President of the United States cannot tell your sheriff what to do. That means the United States Congress cannot tell your sheriff what to do. And if the President and the Congress can't tell your sheriff or anyone else in your state or county what to do, then how did the EPA get that authority? I'm still waiting for somebody to show me how that happened. And in fact, Scalia actually takes us through such a great and powerful history lesson here. He actually has a page that is, and it's in this little book, it's called The Victory for State Sovereignty, the Mack Prince versus USA case, and you can get those on my website at sheriffmack.com as well. But he actually quotes some decisions where the EPA was ruled to be unconstitutional in the early 1970s. Yes, I am telling you the truth. On page 11 of this little booklet, it quotes the entire Scalia wording when it comes to the EPA. They have been ruled to be unconstitutional. So how and why did they get more authority since then? because the states have not exercised their lawful authority and power to keep the federal government in check, to tell them the federal government is not coming in here to check us on anything, not the EPA, not BATF. No one is going to run our state. Arizona can run its own affairs. Texas can run its own affairs. And I'll guarantee you that both Texas and Arizona, two states I've lived in, I'm living in Texas right now, I guarantee you that those two states are smart enough to run their own education without federal government oversight. We do not need the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. They're a bunch of waste of time and money, and I guarantee you that we can run our own without them. And they're so afraid.
And you have, right?
Oh, of course.
I mean, that was going on. Well, the Department of Education came about in the mid-70s, wasn't it? So somehow you survived in Texas and Arizona before that.
Yep, we sure did. In fact, I survived grade school and high school without the Department of Education. And we all can. And it's absurd. It's an absurd economic process that we have become indoctrinated in, if not brainwashed in, that everything needs to come from Washington and that we send all our money there. So for every $100 that we send to Washington, D.C. for educational purposes, they send back maybe $4, maybe $5, maybe some states get $6 out of the $100 that we send them back in as federal grants and federal funding of education. I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty stupid way to handle our economy. Why don't the states just keep all that money in their state and take care of their own education without creating another bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. that is so expensive and so onerous in their approach with this whole thing? We do not need the federal government running our education, our health care, our lands, our waterways, our air, and everything else they think is theirs. They can't even control their own spending habits. They can't even balance the budget. They can't even control the borders or secure the borders. So I say, until they prove that they can control anything that they're constitutionally required to do, that they stay out of the states and leave us the heck alone.
And that decision by the Supreme Court relating to the Brady Bill, I mean, it doesn't and it cannot, and I'm sure Scalia articulated explicitly that it's not like, the federal government can't control sheriffs, and you actually kind of already spoke about this. It's blanket. I mean, except for perhaps the phenomenon where the government will say, well, we're going to give you this $1 billion of grants, and there are some strings attached. Upon acceptance of this grant, you have to, we're going to pull the following strings, and you have to let us do it. But outside of that, it is blanket. They can't control a sheriff and order him what to do any more than they can a mayor, or even just the average citizen. The constitutional limitations were clearly laid out, so there wouldn't be any contact between the federal government and the average citizen.
Well, that's true. And the federal government was designed, and Scalia actually points this out also in this historical expose that he does within this ruling, that he said that the Constitution actually devised a system that keeps the federal government in check, and that the 10th Amendment is actually a protection of state sovereignty that was there all along, that the states were sovereign to begin with, and then they formed the federal government, and as mentioned in the 10th Amendment, they delegated a few things to the federal government, and that those authorities and those delegated powers were detailed within Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. And that at any time the federal government wishes to expand its own authority or become creative and go outside that prescribed enumerated powers, that they would have to refer to the 10th Amendment. But if there's no one in the states forcing that issue, then it's not going to happen. And that's where we have failed and failed miserably. The Founding Fathers warned us that eternal vigilance would be the price of freedom. We have not been vigilant. We have not used the check and balance system known as the 10th Amendment and state sovereignty. And you'll have a question.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we do have another break coming up.
Okay.
Maybe what we could do to further illustrate this, and I've heard you speak and love to sit there in the audience listening, but you've also addressed the so-called Obamacare monstrosity and how that dovetails with the issues that were described in the court case and
yes.
just the overall 10th Amendment issue. So after the break, I'd love to get into that. Our guest is Sheriff Richard Mack, sheriffmack.com. That's Sheriff, SHERIFFMACK, his last name, sheriffmack.com. And CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association.org. We'll be right back after these messages.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from?
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are church orange?
Actually,
Dad, why don't we have any air on red?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Several months ago, I watched as Sarah Palin delivered an inspiring speech to the nation, and I was proud to be a conservative. Today's celebration reminds me of just how blessed I am to be an American. When I was given the opportunity to compete in the Tropicana Speech Contest, I knew that I would write about something dear to me, my freedom. My speech is entitled America's Freedom and is dedicated to my great-grandmother Left, who recently passed away at the age of 95. What do you think about when I say the word freedom? Some think about America being a free country, and others just think about having rights and being free. You probably think this speech is about freedom, but no. It is about how Americans are slowly losing their freedoms. My parents have taught me to love my country, and I appreciate the blood that was shed for our freedom. From the beaches of Normandy to the sands of Iraq, Americans have paid a great price so we could live free. Sadly, many among us just don't seem to care about the sacrifice it took to build this great nation. It seems as though we are more interested in our own pleasures than preserving our independence and liberties. Truth is, there's many who want to change our way of life, who don't respect the great traditions of America. These are the same people who support the growing attack upon our private property in the name of environmental protection, or the recent talk of limiting free speech with the Fairness Doctrine. Now, there's a twist for you. How can it be fair if the people don't get to choose for themselves? Where is the freedom in that? There are those who continually attempt to shoot down our right to bear arms promised by the Second Amendment. On a personal level, we've seen independence, self-reliance, and individual responsibility replaced with complacency and apathy. Today, many of our schools don't teach the values and patriotic pride that my parents were taught just a few years ago. Yes, a price may have been paid on the battlefield, but the war is far from over. If we don't act now, before it's too late, we won't have any freedoms left, and America will no longer be the America we know and love. John Adams said it best when he wrote, "A constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever." I believe we have a patriotic responsibility to stand up to those who seek to destroy these constitutional freedoms. If you believe in the values and principles that made this nation great, and if you enjoy the freedoms we have as Americans, then join me. Join me in standing up to those who seek to destroy these freedoms. Join me in taking back this great nation and protecting our independence and liberties. Because you can make a difference. I can make a difference. And together, we will make a difference. Thank you, and God bless.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
He went without food, not to lose weight, but to help people lose generations of hate. While many around him rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. When others used religion as an excuse for war, he used it to remind them of love. Mahatma Gandhi made the world a far better place by reaching out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. So, pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. My guest is Richard Mack, and it's kind of amazing the similarities that we share. Found it interesting that you said that in November of 1993, Richard, was when the Brady Bill was signed into law, and that was the exact month and year that I began working for the IRS. And, of course, talking about your spouse and, you know, just all the challenges that come with comparing, you know, doing your duty with, the things that could happen to your job and your pay stream and all these different issues. And, you know, we're definitely fellow travelers in that department. Although, you know, your situation, I mean, as you said, you know, the reputation for what happens to those that went up against the Clintons, I think they called them Arkansides. It wasn't too promising. So I really have to hand it, you know, to you that you stuck with it. But what I wanted to get into during this segment, fascinated by the way you would describe the relationship between the Tenth Amendment and this something that's on many people's minds, the so-called Obamacare, and all of the these mandates that are supposedly coming towards us like a freight train. So maybe you could explore that a little bit, because I think the listeners, you know, would love to know how the Tenth Amendment can actually affect them with something like health care.
Yeah, it does. And it sounds like Scalia was actually addressing that very issue of health care, but he certainly addressed federal mandates to the states. That's what this whole thing was about. Can the federal government mandate to the states or to the states' officials? And in my particular case, Scalia said, well, they didn't just mandate the four judges that dissented on this decision said, well, they didn't mandate to the state. They mandated to the sheriffs. And Scalia said, that makes it worse, not better. They're bypassing the state legislature and going to the county official directly. So he says that doesn't help the New York decision or support the New York decision. He says it disembowels that New York decision. And so that's why they had to reiterate the New York case in this particular ruling with the sheriffs. And another thing I like about this decision is that the federal government and the U.S. Supreme Court calls the sheriffs who filed this lawsuit the CLIOs. And the Brady Bill itself said that the CLIO will be responsible for conducting these checks. Well, CLIO stands for Chief Law Enforcement Officer. So this is the first time in American history that you actually have sheriffs being called and determined in writing that they are indeed the CLIOs. So a lot of people have always asked me, well, who's the chief law enforcement authority in the county? Well, we have a Brady bill that says it's the sheriffs. I've always liked that part of this Brady bill. Anyway, because I was always looking for positive things like that. So this is a very powerful decision regarding federal mandates. And the quote that Scalia gives that starts this destruction, I believe, and the absolute powerful ruling that would negate Obamacare, he says this, quote, "The federal government, we held, may not compel the states to enact or administer a federal regulatory program," end quote. So just where do you think that Obamacare is going to be enforced? And the only way that the states can be forced to participate with Obamacare is that if it is not a federal regulatory program. And so how the states could participate and be forced to participate, or the counties, where it's really going to come down to, I believe, would be impossible if you read this decision. And I don't know how many states are using our case. I tried to get this to several states, but I never got anything back with them, response from them regarding the powerful nature of this case of those who are suing the federal government over the issue of Obamacare. Another part of this, and I want to read this right out of the decision as well, is that Scalia calls, this is on page 8 of the little booklet, at the bottom of the page, he calls state sovereignty a structural protection of liberty. It's one of the Constitution's structural protections of liberty. And so whose job is it then to enforce the principles of state sovereignty? Whose job is it to enforce the 10th Amendment? Well, of course, it's the states. We have to. Who else is going to do it? And it certainly, it would be a little bit ridiculous for any of us to think that Barack Obama is going to choose the state sovereignty czar. That's probably not going to happen. And so it's up to the states and local officials to keep the federal government in check. And as a matter of fact, Scalia says that in this Mack Prince ruling. And he says, and I quote, "The federal government," let's see, the independence of the coordinate branches of the federal government serve to prevent the accumulation of excessive power in any one branch. Therefore, a healthy balance of power," this is all a direct quote, "a healthy balance of power between the states and the federal government will reduce the risk of tyranny and abuse from either front." So Scalia gives us the solution, just as I maintain that having a strong constitutional sheriff in your county is a solution. The Constitutional Sheriff Convention that we're having January 30th in Las Vegas at the Tuscany is the solution. You know, we get on all these radio shows, Joe, and you and I have both done it lots and lots of times. And there's certainly the Hannitys and the Becks and the Rush Limbaughs and all those guys out there talking about all the horrible things going on in our country. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but I want a solution. And this is now a time where we have a solution right in the hands of the American people. And your help with this and donating to this holy cause is going to help promote this solution. And yet we donate to all these other things that really are distractions from the solution. And so this is the one thing that Scalia just did. He gave us the solution. He said a healthy balance of power between the states and the federal government will stop tyranny. So I ask every one of your listeners, Joe, do we have that balance of power today? Well, that's kind of obvious. We don't. So how do we get it back? We get it back sheriff by sheriff, county by county, state by state, and one sheriff at a time and one county commissioner at a time. And that's why this meeting in Las Vegas is so vital to the holy cause of liberty,
that we will take America back. And it will not happen in Washington, D.C., my good friends. It will happen in your county. This is a grassroots effort. You can do it. You're part of this saving of America. And I promise you, if you will get on board this holy cause of liberty, we will take it back.
Well, I mean, every American lives in a county, and every county has a sheriff. And we have to, well, especially I can testify to the fact of, you know, when, well, you can too. Yours was more of a civil situation. However, they were threatening criminal action against you. Whereas with me, you know, they not only threatened criminal action, they carried through with it and prosecuted me, and I was acquitted as I deserved to be. But what our listeners need to understand is that one-on-one, you know, the federal government will squash you like a bug, or at least they're going to try. And you absolutely need a strong sheriff who knows what their duty is and knows what their authority is. And so this is just such an awesome effort that people need to support, because it will just take us all light years ahead in terms of protecting our rights and having someone that's already in office. They already have the prescription for their duty. It's already there. All you need to do is put their nose in it, so to speak. And also for these sheriffs to see that their colleagues, their peers across the country, the ones that are already waking up to this, the sheriffs who have already joined the CSPOA, the sheriffs that are on the board, the sheriffs that are going to attend this convention in January in Las Vegas. It's going to be like this snowball that's going to just grow and grow and grow. But individual citizens have to come in and help support it, and then it can really take off.
Yeah, and it is taking off, and it is taking a life of its own. And we're getting citizens saying, "How do I get my sheriff there?" And I'll tell you right now, it costs $1,000 per sheriff to attend. So if you want to raise the money for your sheriff to attend, I'm not saying that will guarantee that he'll get there. I'm saying that'll guarantee that he'll get an invitation to get there. And then a lot of these other sheriffs are going to be calling the sheriffs they know and say, "Hey, we really want you there." And we're not inviting every sheriff in the country. I'm telling you that right now. We're not going to waste our time and money on some of these sheriffs who have strongly indicated that they do not want anything to do with the oath of office or the Constitution. And regrettably, we do have some sheriffs like that. But there are plenty of sheriffs still remaining in the country. There are 3,100 sheriffs in this country. By year's end, we hope to have a couple more of these meetings and have regional meetings. And I'm doing one in Indiana very soon, and one in Alabama very soon, where all the sheriffs are being invited to state meetings of this same nature, that we're going to be studying the Constitution, their authority, their responsibility to interpose on behalf of the people. This is something that is very provable. It's all fundamental. It's all about freedom and our Constitution, and basically also whether or not you'll keep your word when you take an oath of office. What did you swear that you would do? And so we hope, really by year's end, that we'll have about 400, 500, 600 sheriffs by the end of 2012 who are constitutional sheriffs. Once you get that many working in tandem, working together, there will be no stopping it, Joe. You know it as well as I do. That many sheriffs standing united in the holy cause of liberty as oath keepers, as sheriffs that will not tolerate any violations of the Bill of Rights within their counties. You know, the federal government will not be able to stop it.
And what's also good, I think, is that although there are efforts underway to wake up the state legislatures, that's somewhat like akin to herding cats. And so this effort, where just going and educating sheriffs, and if there's a sheriff that's recalcitrant and says, you know, "I'm not going to obey my oath," or "I'm not going to learn what this is all about," vote them out. You know, you have a lot more control in a particular county to just put in a sheriff who's going to do the right thing than you do to go to the state legislature and try to, you know, steer the Titanic. So not to say that those efforts shouldn't continue, but this effort is something that's so tangible that it's just remarkable. We got another break coming up, and so I'd like to just quickly, we have one more segment after this, but I just want to point out for the listeners that if you go to sheriffmac.com, over there on the left-hand side, there's a link to the various books that Sheriff Mac has written, and I've got copies of them. They are remarkable. You've got to get copies. The latest one is The Magic of Gun Control, that's available for ordering. Another book is The County Sheriff, which I understand is both an audio book and a written book. And The Victory for State Sovereignty, which I understand actually addresses more the details of the Brady Bill Supreme Court case. Is that correct, Richard?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, so we've got a break coming up. Our guest is Richard Mack, CSPOA.org and SheriffMack.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on jurisdiction.
When the U.S. territories applied for admission into the Union as states, the overarching principle that drove this decision was the desire to determine their own destinies and to be removed from what the U.S. Constitution calls the exclusive legislative jurisdiction of the Congress over the properties owned by the U.S. government. When what is now the state of Washington removed itself from this exclusive jurisdiction, it was required to write its own constitution, which would provide for a representative republican form of government for its citizens, such as the case for every state which joined our union. Today, our U.S. government officials and bureaucrats have lost sight of this fact and now want to reassert exclusive legislative jurisdiction over the states and turn them into administrative subdivisions as though we were territories again. Sorry, U.S. government. But the Constitution says you don't have that authority. And Americans are beginning to realize that our founders intended for the individual states to either succeed or fail based on their own laws and policies. If the people don't like the way a particular state operates, they can move to another one where they do. The way our federal government operates today, the entire nation either succeeds or fails based on the policies of 535 legislators in Washington, D.C. And from what we can see from its history of failed social policies, I don't think these guys could pour sand out of a boot if the directions were written on the heel. We need to replace the socialist mindset in Washington, D.C. and our state governments with a restored American view of law and government.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, and we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back.
This is in the best interest of the American people.
This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
Came here for news every day.
Are you concerned about the side effects of using hormonal birth control?
Look into a natural method of family planning that's 99% effective, environmentally green, and causes no risks to your health. For information on learning natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study, see the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, my friend. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. My guests for today's show have been Richard Mack, a remarkable man who's fought battle after battle that has acknowledged rights that we've always had in our respective states and vis-a-vis the federal government, and brought about concepts, especially in these Supreme Court decisions, that are a benefit to us all, to keep the government obeying the laws, obeying the Constitution. And the more the government obeys the law and the Constitution, the less tyranny that's going to be banging down our front doors. I thought I might ask Richard, some anecdotal evidence, some anecdotal stories about his interaction with sheriffs, especially over the last 5 or 10 years. I'm sure plenty of sheriffs took notice when that decision was rendered by the Supreme Court back in 1997. But Richard, how about just some more your interaction with actual sheriffs across the country and how they've embraced this idea of a Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association?
Yeah, it's been really amazing to witness some of this myself. And of course, while I was sheriff, I had a few other fights or confrontations with the federal government. At one point, we had a bridge washout on the east side of the county in a little town called San Jose in Solomon, and the Army Corps of Engineers would not allow us to get anything ready to fix it or do anything to repair the bridge. And people on the north side of the bridge had to take their kids to school to the south side of the bridge, which was only about a mile drive. Without that bridge, they had to drive 26 miles just to take their kids to school. And to go from a mile trip to a 26-mile trip didn't set well with these people, and so they really got mad at the county commissioners and said, hey, fix the bridge yourselves. You know, why are you waiting for the federal government to do this, and you can't depend on them for anything anyway? And so finally, the county commissioners voted unanimously just to fix the bridge over the objections of the Army Corps of Engineers and federal government. So the Army Corps of Engineers come in and threaten to arrest the county commissioners and all the people working at the bridge. They said that that's all federal property. The river, the Gila River, belongs to the federal government, and you can't do this.
So I came in and I told the Army Corps of Engineers, in fact, I called them to my office and said, if you try to arrest anybody, I will arrest you. And I told the Board of Supervisors, the county commissioners, that if they needed, we would call out the posse, that I would have my deputies working double shifts without charging any overtime, and that we would indeed protect everybody who's repairing the bridge. And so I told the Army Corps of Engineers, I'm a real nice guy, I'm easy to get along with, but I'm not bluffing. And so the county fixed the bridge. And the Army Corps of Engineers said that we would be fined $50,000 a day for every day we were not in compliance with their orders. Well, nobody went to jail, nobody got arrested, the threat stopped, and we did not pay one dime in fine to the federal government. We fixed the bridge, and life went on, and we proved once again that the federal government is completely unnecessary, that we don't need these guys running our lives, that we can certainly fix bridges and take care of fires without them. And so now we have sheriffs in Oregon, California, Indiana, and other places who are standing against the federal government. In Oregon, we have Sheriff Glenn Palmer. In Grant County, Sheriff Gil Gilbertson in Josephine County, who are standing against the incursions, and that's a word Justice Scalia uses in my ruling as well, standing against the incursions of the federal government. We also have sheriff in Utah doing a similar thing against the Department of Interior. And we have now a great story and a great victory that just occurred in Indiana. In Elkhart County, Sheriff Brad Rogers, who is on our board of directors with the CSPOA, has stood for the little guy, has stood and interposed himself on behalf of an Amish farmer who refuses to pasteurize their milk. Well, you need to know that is one of the religious tenets of the Amish religion. They do not use such things to destroy the natural process of milk. And they don't use electrical things, which pasteurization does do. So anyway, they won't burn their milk. They won't destroy their milk because the federal government, FDA, tells them to. So this guy gets threatened by the FDA. So the sheriff finds out about it, and he tells the FDA if they don't have a warrant and if they don't have probable cause, that they're not allowed on this particular farmer's property anymore. Well, then the FDA writes back to Sheriff Rogers and says, if you interfere in any of this process, you will be arrested for a felony. And Sheriff Rogers called me, and he said, listen, Mac, I'm not intimidated by these guys at all. Would you help me prepare a response? So Sheriff Rogers and I looked at all the Supreme Court cases, including my own, and told the federal government in no uncertain terms they were not allowed to violate the Fourth Amendment in this particular case just because they have regulations that allow them to do so. And lo and behold, we sent that off to them. And just a few days later, this Amish farmer, David, got a certified letter from the FDA telling him that the investigative grand jury had been disbanded, and that any possible and further action against him would not take place, and all possible charges against him were dropped. And, Joe, I have to tell you, that's exactly why we need this convention on January 30th, and why we are trying so desperately to raise money to get as many sheriffs as we can to that conference. This is going to be a conference where we create more Sheriff Rogers and more Sheriff Gilbertsons and more Sheriff Palmers. And these guys are going to be the speakers and the teachers at this conference, as well as one of the best teachers I've ever known, one Joe Bannister, who used to work for the IRS.
Well, it's going to be an honor to speak there. And I had mentioned to you off air about all of my family members. Just full of cops or guns and badges in the Bannister family. And actually my uncle, my dad is deceased, but my dad's brother was a deputy sheriff in Santa Clara County, California, for 30 years. So I'll definitely be prominently showing the picture I have with my uncle. And maybe I can even get my uncle to come to the meeting, come to the convention.
That'd be great. Yeah, go ahead, bring him.
You know, and have him come up on stage and say, this is my uncle who I'm very, you know, very proud of and very joyful to have as an uncle. And he spent his whole career serving the citizens of Santa Clara County. And anyway, so I'm just tickled pink about this effort, Richard. I think it's going to be wonderful no matter how many sheriffs show up. But I think we need to reiterate for the listeners how important it is and also how approachable the average sheriff is compared with, say, the, you know, California legislature, the Nevada legislature, the New York legislature. You know, your county sheriff is going to be pretty accessible. Get your group together. If you have a Second Amendment group or church group, or it doesn't matter, a group of 5 citizens, 10 citizens or more, and set up an appointment with your sheriff and inform them about this effort that's going to culminate on January 30th in Las Vegas, and then we'll continue, like Richard said, with other events. But go to CSPOA.org, which is the acronym for Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association, and gather some information and present it to your local sheriff. And I bet you know, if you get in touch with Richard and you actually get a dialogue going with your sheriff, Richard would be happy to step in and have a telephone conversation with the sheriff. You really can make a difference. If, you know, 3,000 counties, we need every hand rowing, don't we, Richard?
Well, we sure do, and it's an effort that just needs everybody to get involved. So hopefully everybody listening to your program today will take it upon themselves to be part of this. We need volunteers, we need drivers, we need more fundraising, we need people helping at the event, maybe security. We're going to be checking everybody's ID. We need help registering all the sheriffs and peace officers who are attending. So this is a great effort. We've had people donating all across the country, but quite frankly, we've raised about $60,000, and we need twice that, probably three times that. And so it's taken us 8 weeks to get $60,000, and now during Christmas and the holidays, and oh man, we've got to double that within the next 4 weeks.
Well, it doesn't hurt for people to pray for the effort as well. You know, that God's blessings were obviously there when Richard took on this battle for to simply not redefine, but simply define once again what the limitations to federal power were. And so God's blessing smiled on that effort, and you know, we can ask him to smile on this effort as well, which is simply to point out to the sheriff what their job is and what their power is and how their power can be exercised in a constitutional manner for the benefit of all the citizens in their county. Well, we have a couple minutes left in the show. Richard, any last comments that you could offer to the listeners as encouragement or you know, direction with how they could you know, volunteer their efforts to help you?
Yeah, sure. You know, Joe, my whole life has been one miracle after another. And I certainly don't say that to brag about me, because miracles don't come from an individual. They come from God. But, you know, no one said that I could win sheriff. When I walked into town, not being in town 12 years, never serving in Arizona as a law enforcement official or in my county, everyone said, "What are you doing? That's crazy. You can't win." And then I won twice. Then I filed a lawsuit against the federal government. Everybody said, "What are you, crazy? You can't win. What are you doing?" And then we take this miraculously all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Two small town sheriffs taking on the Goliath federal government, the Clinton administration no less, and we won. And then I wrote a book, and people said, well, you know what? Nobody's ever going to read your book. And then a miracle later, over 90,000 copies have been distributed throughout America. The county sheriff, America's Last Hope. And then we said, let's have a national convention where we train more constitutional sheriffs in this country. And people are saying, oh, you can't do it. Well, I say we can, and it's going to be another miracle. And I'm asking everybody listening today to join with us on that miracle. We can make this happen. If you join with us in this holy cause of liberty, we will make it happen. Just one more miracle. That's all we're hoping and praying for. One more miracle so that we can restore America as the true constitutional republic it was meant to be. I ask all of you to join me with that. Just as the founders did, we've mutually pledged to each other our lives, our fortunes, and sacred honor.
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect timing, because we're just about out of time. So everyone, please go to sheriffmack.com and look at the great books you can get that Sheriff described during the program here. And of course, go to CSPOA.org. That's the acronym for Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Thank you, Richard, very much for coming on to the show, and we'll beat the drum as loudly as we can from the radio show to get support for this wonderful effort. You take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot, Joe. See you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things. Can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails in cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and pinch it with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House! You may say, do I have any evidence to support my supposition? His grandparents were socialists, his mother was, his father was a communist, he had Marxist professors, he taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky, he told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cabin trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody is a communist living in the White House.
Way that you kill somebody when they're innocent and defenseless is detestable.
My biological mother was 7.5 months pregnant when she had a saline abortion, which was meant to burn me both inside and out, and the doctors have also said that I should be blind and all of these horrendous things. Praise the Lord, the abortionist was not on duty the moment that I came into the world. Praise the Lord, the abortionist was not on duty the moment that I came into the world. I was actually delivered in an abortion clinic. Had he been there at the time, he could have ended my life with strangulation, suffocation, or leaving me there to die. But a nurse called an ambulance and had me transferred to a hospital. Had he been there at the time, he could have ended my life with strangulation.